The University of California Berkeley professor Alva Noe is one of our foremost philosophers of consciousness and perception. In his book, Out of Our Heads, Noe challenged the centuries-old paradigm that consciousness is something that occurs solely within the confines of our brains. Now, in his new book, Strange Tools, Art and Human Nature, he turns his focus to essential questions about art. Strange Tools is published by Hill and Wang, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Alva Noe to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Did you know at some point, especially when you were working on the last book, that eventually you would get around to art?
Oh, that's a great question, because the answer is absolutely not. And for me, it turned out to be a kind of a discovery that the questions I was exploring led in that direction. And it was actually a pretty personally rewarding discovery, because I come from a family of artists. My parents were artists. My brother's an artist. And it was a kind of a sort of feeling that through my own research practice, I was returning to my personal starting points.
So what were the starting points? When it comes to what you wanted to explore, what was the baseline and where did you want to go from there?
Well, when philosophers and cognitive scientists or neuroscientists ask questions about art, they tend to think of art as a phenomenon that they're going to explain, or indeed explain away. And one of the things that I came to realize is that we shouldn't actually think of art as something to explain, but rather art is itself a domain of learning and investigation. It's a kind of research. That's a funny idea, I think, to most of us. Although if you talk to artists, the idea that what they're doing is investigating or exploring or researching is a pretty familiar idea to them, I think. And so one of the questions that I really was starting with is, well, if art is a kind of research, what kind of research is it? And how best to understand what art does, and then maybe that could be give us a clue to why art is so important to us.
So in that claim that trying to explain art often misses the mark, let me just go back one step and ask the question of why do you think we need to have that explanation, so many of us?
Well, you know, I am a philosopher, and philosophy does begin in wonder. And I just am gripped by three questions. What is art? Why does it matter so much to us? And what does that fact, that it matters so much to us, reveal about ourselves or tell us about ourselves? And I think that there's a tendency in our culture and in our scientific culture to think of consciousness, to think of perception, to think of experience as something that happens inside of us, that gets triggered by the stimulation bombarding us. And one of the things that I think art gives us a paradigm for thinking about is the way in which experiences are actually achieved. They're made. You can go to the gallery, and just the fact that works of art strike your retina doesn't mean that you're getting them, doesn't mean that you're having anything that deserves to be called an aesthetic experience. On the sort of traditional view that I've railed against, an aesthetic experience is just like any old experience, except that it's got some special mark, the aesthetic. But I think that aesthetic experiences are more like conversations, or they're more like meals. They have beginnings and ends, and how you feel about them change in the middle of it, and they're influenced by who you're with and what you're thinking about. And if you want to explore aesthetic experience, you need to get away from a kind of notion that the world around us just triggers events in our head, and start looking at the way in which we, as you know, full human beings with a background and with knowledge and with all sorts of interests, engage with the world.
With that in mind, and just looking at the title of the book, so in that process, what is the strange tool? What are the strange tools?
Well, one of the fascinating things about art, And this is especially fascinating if you accept my starting point, which is that art is a kind of research practice. If you take that idea seriously, then you immediately confront a kind of puzzle. If art is a research practice, why are artists so concerned with making stuff? Artists make sculptures, they make paintings, they make performances, they make poems, they make compositions. And art seems to have this, and this is undeniable, this is a totally non-controversial fact, art is bound up with making, doing, manufacture. And yet, at the very same time, it's also, I think, pretty uncontroversial that we don't measure the success of a work of art by how well it was manufactured or by how well it performs this or that function. Indeed, very frequently, there are no functions that we can say this work of art is performing. Now, sometimes I think artworks do simply work in the same way. If you look at a photograph in an online website, that photograph is a tool for you to think about the jacket that you might want to order. Similarly, a great painting, a portrait, might give you a tool for thinking about or even visually experiencing the person depicted in the portrait. But we don't measure the success of the portrait by the same standards that we measure the success of the photograph in the online catalog. And so if that's true, then why are artists so concerned with making and with craft and with manufacture? And what I discovered, at least my personal discovery, the position I came to, is that artists are concerned with making, not because the things they make are so special, but because making and making activities are so important to us, to human beings. We've been making, we've been manufacturing, we've been using technology since our very dawn as a species, whether it's, you know, tools for cutting and chopping or tools for making tools. And in a more extended sense, I think you can even think of language and pictures as a kind of tool, a kind of technology. So we've been making for a long time, and our making activities, I think, are kind of defining of us as a species. If you look at the archaeological record and ask, where does the psychologically modern human being first enter the stage some 30 to 50,000 years ago? And it's when we see this burst of making activity, this burst of tool using and so on. And so the thought I had is that art makes stuff to investigate that fact about ourselves or to put that fact about ourselves on display or to unveil that fact about ourselves. So the thought is that artists make stuff that looks just like tools, but they're tools that don't serve a function, or rather the only function they might serve is to reveal something general about the place of tools in our lives. So I call them strange tools. They're tools whose purpose is not to perform this or that function, but to unveil us to ourselves, as I put it in the book.
Alva Noe is our guest this morning. He's the author of the new book, Strange Tools, Art and Human Nature, published by Hill and Wang. You write about halfway through the book about boredom, and specifically you start off writing about boredom in childhood and that feeling. And you write, what does this have to do with art? My conjecture is everything. The closest I have come as an adult to reliving the florid boredom of childhood is when in the presence of art. Don't get me wrong, I love art, I work with art, I study art, I was raised in a family of artists, art matters to me, and yet it is hard for me to think of anything more slit-your-wrists dull than some performances or more excruciatingly sleep-inducing than encountering, yet again, a gallery space with pictures on the wall, each of which to begin with at least, is closed, mute, indistinguishable, and off-putting. So, how do those strange tools work when there is such boredom around it?
Well, in a way, what I think is art's, one of art's special gifts, you can talk about art in so many different ways, but one of art's special gifts is that it affords us this opportunity to be bored. Now, why is that a gift? I think it's because part of what it is to be an integrated, developed, fully, you know, adult human being is to be wrapped up in the projects of life. One has a career, one has a marriage, the days are made up of sort of nameable events. There's my conversation with you or my visit to New York. There's the time it took me to write the book. Our lives come in these arcs of projects and these beginnings and middles and ends. And I think, you know, people often ask, how come time speeds up for grown-ups, you know, as compared to childhood? And I think the reason it speeds up is that we don't live in metronomic time. We don't live in 1 second after another time as grown-ups. We live in sort of these chapter heading structures of time. There's, you know, the summer vacation, which might have been a month long, it might have been 2 days long. It's not how many seconds it contained. It's what we did, where we went, that defines it. And works of art, because they're strange tools, they're objects that have no self-evident meaning or significance. They force us, essentially, to interrupt the projects, and in doing that, they force us back into metronomic time. They force us back into just 1 second after another. And all of a sudden, we don't have that protection against boredom, which our adulthood has achieved for us. And we need to make meaning for ourselves in that situation. So the thought in a way, I said, by the way, that the work of art forces that on us. Of course it doesn't. You can be with your friend and you're just wrapped up in conversation and you're walking through the gallery. You don't get it just for the price of admission in the gallery or in the concert or wherever it is that you're interested in wherever it is that you're surrounded by art. You actually have to kind of take the trouble to look and to put your cell phone away and to stop the conversation. You have to make the effort to try to engage. And the initial thing that happens when you try to engage is you're stripped of your own agenda. And I think that initial encounter with art can be irritating. It can be boring. And that boredom then gives us the opportunity to break through the boredom and to let that be instructive to us. You know, for instance, why are we bored? What is it we've given up? What is it that's being challenged? You know, when you look at a photograph in the newspaper, that photograph has a caption. It's illustrating something. It's part of a story. Mm-hmm. You don't ever say to yourself, what is this picture of Obama? Why is there a picture of Obama? It's always clear that the president is being illustrated because it accompanies a story. And so we just effortlessly make use of that. We make use of those sort of picture technologies. But when you're in a gallery and you look at a picture, you have to ask yourself the question, well, I think it's a picture, but what is it a picture of, and why is it a picture of that? What's the caption? What's it doing? And that's initially, that can be, I think, irritating and boring, but it also then lets you think, maybe this is what it's doing.
University of California at Berkeley professor Alva Noe is our guest this morning. One of our foremost philosophers of consciousness and perception. His new book is Strange Tools, Art and Human Nature. The book is published by Hill and Wang. To your point of engaging with art, through that process we're able to study ourselves in new ways, in profound ways. How do we start that? What is a good way to begin doing that, to reframe it?
You know, one of the themes in the book is that, as I said, art is a research practice.
Right.
But it's that art is a philosophical practice. Or actually in the book I call it a reorganizational practice. It's a practice that has the opportunity not only to reveal us to ourselves, but to change us. And the question you're asking, you know, how to start that, how to start an engagement with art, or how to start an engagement with philosophy. I dare say that many of your listeners don't regularly read philosophy. And if I can, I'm sort of answering you a little bit indirectly, but, you know, when you read a philosophy text, one of the things you can rarely do is say, oh, this author has successfully and adequately for the ages proved this. Rather, it's not the bottom line in the philosophy text that matters. It's the journey, it's the thought process, it's the exploration of arguments and ideas that pull you in different directions, and different philosophers are suggesting things that pull you in different directions. Philosophy is not about a bottom line, and art's not about a bottom line either. And somehow what you need to do is simply look, simply engage. You need to, in the case of art, you need to question and interrogate. Although so many of the arts are visual, in an interesting way, art is not optical. Art is much more intellectual than that. Which, by the way, is not to say that it's not also a matter of great feeling and emotion, because I actually think that the intellect is emotional too. Puzzlement is an emotional state, and wonder is an emotional state, and art taps into all of those.
So another way of asking the question, and actually your answer was very direct. I'm interested in then what you hope the reader gets out of the book that would allow them to, if not start, then to continue the process of experiencing the art in a different way.
What one needs to do is trust oneself and trust one's reactions and realize that, you know, you're standing there in the museum and you see that picture on the wall and you don't get it. It's not of self-evident significance. You know, I used to think, imagine somebody had a museum of jokes, and you know, you drag your kids along to the museum and say, these things are all in here because they're funny. Over here we have, you know, ethnic jokes, and over here we have religious jokes, and over here we have political jokes, and you walk through and you amuse yourself. But just because somebody tells you that a joke is funny doesn't make it funny. You have to get it, and to get it requires a whole background, a whole participation in whatever the communicative context is in which the joke was made. And I think it's the same with art. Just because it hangs in the museum, it doesn't mean it's of any special meaning to you. I mean, there's a good chance that it could be meaningful to you because smart, good people chose to put it in the museum for you. But you have to do work. You don't get aesthetic experience just for the price of admission. You have to achieve it, and you do that through looking, through questioning, through asking, and to go back to where I began, trusting the fact that at first you don't get it, and that's okay. I say in the book that the artwork says, "See me if you can." The artwork doesn't say, "Check me out, I'm gorgeous." The art says, "I bet you don't even know what I am. I bet you don't even know what this is supposed to be." And the provocation, the dare, the invitation is for you, just with the resources at your disposal, your thoughts, your eyes, your knowledge, your time, to bring it into focus and to see it.
And if you can't see it, and that piece of art is saying, "See me if you can," and you can't, is that on you or the art?
That's a lovely question. I think it's a little bit of both. The choreographer Jonathan Burrows once wrote that a person who creates performances is in an implicit contract with the audience that he or she provides the audience some clue, some information to be able to get something out of the work, to be able to, if you like, see it. There can't be an indifference. So in that sense, the artist or the work of art is at least trying in some kind of good faith way, I think, to give you the resources you would need to accept the challenge. Now, if you can't accept the challenge, I mean, you may not accept the challenge because you've got to go to work. You've got to feed the kids. You don't have time to do
that. Right.
But if you do choose to accept the challenge, then it's on you to activate the process, to activate the work, to as I put it sort of metaphorically in the book, you have to press the on button. Just because it's hanging on the wall isn't enough. You have to look and question and interrogate and think. You have to move. You have to act in order to perceive. And by the way, to go back to where we began the conversation with my first book, or rather my last book on consciousness, Out of Our Heads, I think that's actually true of experience in general. We need to enact our experience. We need to carry it out.
The name of the new book is Strange Tools, Art and Human Nature. It is published by Hill and Wang. Alva Noe, I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure to speak with you.
Indeed. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Strange Tools, Art and Human Nature. The book is published by Hill and Wang. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.